This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Recovery Radio. I'm Steve Martorano. Each week we're here, we talk about the disease of addiction and the road to recovery. This is Recovery Radio, sponsored each and every week by Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. If you're out and about, as we say goodbye to the month of April and running some late Saturday errands, and you've got us tuned to the station, you might want to hang around. The subject of the disease of addiction is something that, tragically, more and more people are becoming personally and intimately involved with. So there's a lot of general knowledge out there. Some of it's even accurate. If it has never touched your life, I almost am certain that you will know someone at some point, if you don't already, whose lives have been touched by this disease. That is how pervasive this disease is growing every day. You see the stories. You know what we're facing. So we like to think that this program is for a lot of different kinds of people. I know it's a cliche, but it's true. To be forewarned is to be forearmed. So we are here at the direct request of the people at Retreat as an informational tool. We want to inform you of what's at stake with this disease and leave you with a lot of information and the clear understanding that there's help out there. Millions and millions of people manage to get sober. So that's what Recovery Radio is all about. We hope you can spend some time with us. As I say, we're here each and every Saturday. We avail ourselves of the good people and the expert clinicians at Retreat. They are very often our guests, and that's the case this afternoon, this evening. Stacy McGee joins us, first time on the program. Stacy's an interesting guy. He's got a great background. He is a clinical specialist with Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. He's also the pastor of his church, and he's not from around here, as you will notice immediately from his wonderful Southern accent. Tracy McGee, thanks for joining us on Recovery Radio.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So you're a pastor?
Yes, I am. Yes, I've been pastoring for about 5 years.
Oh. Well, great. I mean, this is be interesting to find out how these two roles intersect. Let's find out about you professionally. How long have you been in the treatment field?
I've been in the treatment field about 27 plus years.
Beginning where?
California. I was a professional musician out in California, trying to get a record deal and kind of fell into treatment.
Yeah, yeah. So really, this is a great, colorful background. What kind of a musician were you? What kind of music were you making?
Well, it was in the mid-80s, so I graduated from Musicians Institute of Technology, and I went there to be a big rock star. And so we shopped our original music out, you know, different bands and stuff, and tried to become big time.
How'd that work out, Stace?
Didn't work out too good.
Do you still play?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting thing. I digress here for a moment, but so many of the people that work at Retreat are musicians. Professional musicians, or they just noodle around on guitars, and the CEO of Retreat must have a dozen guitars sitting around.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, well, we know, and we'll get into a little bit of this. Music is just one of the many therapies that are being employed in
most
this
definitely.
Field. So over 27 years in the treatment field, what kinds of jobs have you done? Tell me where you began and what kinds of things you've done.
Well, actually, I was a musician, so I needed a job. So I started, I met a counselor in a meeting, and so I started as a clinical aide, you know, a care assistant. We used to call them techs back then. And so I just started working in that, and then I found out, working with the therapist, I said, you're really good at this. So I said, really? Okay. So I went on to get my certification in addiction. And that's kind of how I got started.
Yeah, 27 years ago in California, you needed to be certified. That wasn't the case everywhere, was it?
No, it wasn't. But that was a trend then. It was just like you had to have your CADAC, you know. And
tell us what that
certified addiction counselor, you know, in California.
I ask because a lot of people automatically assume that everyone who is at your level or other levels who don't have a doctor in front of their name in this field, the field mm-hmm. of treatment, is just someone who was struggling with drugs and alcohol, got sober, and now has a job passing that information on. While that's true in many, many cases, this is a discipline and now has to be licensed almost anywhere, right? Everywhere, right?
Yes, it's actually kind of – it depends on what state you're in. You're in like three levels. There's an associate's, a bachelor's, and a master's level in this, even though some states are certified. But like in Louisiana, we actually have a license. So I was actually a licensed addiction counselor, master's level.
Yeah, it's important for people to know that, because when they look for treatment, should they get to that point where treatment's necessary for themselves or loved ones, they need to know that who they're talking to. And
most definitely.
Yeah, and what their level of education is.
Yeah, I mean, we need to be well trained in this field. This is a very complicated field, and it's important that you not only know addiction but know other areas of treatment.
Yeah, we're going to get into that as well. Our guest, Stacy McGee, clinical specialist at Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, joining us for Recovery Radio today. So, Stacy, at the beginning, when that therapist that you were aiding said to you, "You're good at this," Did you know why they said that? Did you know what it was that made you good at this? Was it empathy? Was it understanding the?
I think it was just I caught on real fast, and I was really good in the group process, and I worked really well with the patients because I came from that kind of background, mm-hmm. so that you know, and so and I really enjoyed it, you know. So I said, well, maybe I can do this.
Mm-hmm. Like, so you like being in front of people, right?
Yes, I do. Unfortunately.
All right. So what keeps you in the field, though? You're going in almost 30 years in this. What keeps you in the field of treatment, addiction treatment?
Sometimes I ask myself that question. I did leave treatment for a brief, couple of years because I was just, I don't know, I wanted to do something. I was burned out, but. It's like it's in my blood, you know. It's like pastoring. It's just something you're called to do. It's mm-hmm. in your blood. So, I consider it part of my ministry. So,
do you really?
Yes, I do. And I think you really got to be called to be a therapist or an addictions counselor or whatever it is. So it's just I couldn't stay away. That's just what I love to do.
Over the years, what have you worked with all age groups?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Tell us about that experience. Have you worked with adolescents? You worked with them all.
I've worked with children, adolescents, adults, prisoners. I mean, I've pretty case management. I've really done just about everything you could do. So I kind of started in a dual diagnosis hospital. You know,
that's where you began?
That's where I began, yes. It was a couple of hospitals I worked in California at. And and I've seen all the – I know we'll get into the trends, but I just kind of worked there, got certification, and
Well, you were lucky you were in California.
I was very fortunate and got a lot of good training.
California's been – California is sort of an outlier for a lot of things in this country. California is a very big and influential place, and so stuff they're doing generally affects the rest of the country.
Most definitely.
One way or another. So you were out there 30 years ago seeing, we're going to talk about trends, but you were seeing dual diagnosis mm-hmm. out there even then, and that must have been a brand new thing, right?
Well, it was when it was really motivated by insurance companies. When management care came in. So,
Explain for a moment what dual diagnosis means. We throw these terms around here, assuming people know exactly what we're talking about, and folks might not. What is a dual diagnosis in the context of treating addiction?
Well, the simplest way to put it is, besides addiction, you have some other form of mental health, depression, anxiety, or something else going on besides the addiction. So that's basically it.
In the past, as I understand it, the medical community would separate these things. If you were abusing drugs and somebody said you're also depressed, you would wind up seeing a psychiatrist, and then somebody else would have to worry about
the
addiction. Is that the way it used to work?
Yeah, that's kind of based the way it worked. So, but again, I think the insurance companies had a big trend on that. And but
in a positive way, I guess, for a change, right?
I think it was in very positive way.
Well, they were also forced. Let's be honest about this.
Well, they were forced
with regard to treating these things, giving them parity. In other words, you're going to treat drug abuse and
then you're going to treat
on the same level.
So you're getting two in one at the same place. Is basically what you were saying. And but yeah, it was a lot of positive that came out of it. And
Did you ever have the occasion in your career to do intake where you sit with people and discuss their case before they come in to a clinic?
I did a little bit of it, but you know, a lot of the centers I worked at in California, they had their own intake, like Retreat has.
Yeah.
You know, they had their own admissions. So one place I worked for, it was pretty a predominant treatment center. And so we were getting kind of the elite, you know, clients, you know. So they would actually had a separate building for the whole admissions.
Really? And to protect their privacy even more, was that were these,
well,
were that, these
was,
famous
that was
people?
One part of it, but yeah. it was just a big place.
Yeah. I ask about that intake because again, when you finally get to the extraordinary moment where you're in front of a healthcare professional trying to get sober, and they're going to start asking you some questions.
Screening is an
really,
assessment.
Right?
It's critical, you know. So we can, you know, set up the right design of treatment, you know, for this patient.
Yeah. I mean, if you go to an emergency room, it's pretty self-evident what your problems are going to be. Some doc's going to see you go, well, your leg's broken, right? And we know what to do. But when you come in for the disease of addiction, there's a lot of things going on that that person doing the first interview there needs to get clear. Otherwise, you know, you could get the wrong treatment. I'm always struck by how comprehensive that is at a place like Retreat. Our guest on Recovery Radio today, Stacy McGee. Stacy, going on over 25, almost 30 years now in the field of treating the disease of addiction. He is a clinical specialist now with our sponsor, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. And we will continue our discussion with him straight ahead, so don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. I'm Steve Martorano. Our guest in the studio, clinical specialist Stacy McGee. He's a first-time guest on the program, and he's talking about his career of over 27 years in the field of treatment addiction. So, 27 years. We're going to get into the changes you've seen in the trends a little bit later, but I would guess after over three decades in this field, you got a pretty good idea of what the role of a therapist is. But a lot of people don't know. They don't know what therapists do or what they're supposed to do. So, in a nutshell, how do you see the role of a therapist? Are you a father confessor? Are you a stern dad? Are you a drill sergeant? What do you see it?
Well, I think the role of the therapist, you know, the first thing I think you really have to have is you have to have a lot of empathy for your clients, and you have to fulfill their needs. I think a lot of therapists, you know, I think we learn over time, but it's really about meeting the needs of the patient and conceptualizing, you know, with gathering history or assessments or whatever, you know, what actually that patient needs and what therapy technique that you need to meet that need. So I'm fortunate to make many mistakes over the years and learn a lot of different types of techniques and roles. But sometimes, yeah, you do got to be stern. Sometimes you got to use a Rogerian type therapy. So it's like, it's really focusing in on what type of therapy and what role you play with that patient.
Yeah. It's a trial and error proposition here about what kind of person, I would guess it's like, what kind of person do I have in front of me? And right. What techniques may they rise to the best?
Is that right? And also, what kind of diagnosis do they have?
Right.
You know, if you have a borderline personality disorder, you know, you're going to try to use the best therapy that treats a borderline. You know, and what I like about us at a Retreat is, you know, we have a very wide range of staff. You know, from psychologist, a psychiatrist, and we're very team-oriented, and we can go to any of those guys at any time and
get some advice or some insight. Yeah.
Yes. You know, we have our clinical specialist team. We have, you know, just a meeting every week, a staffing, you know, where we could talk about all our patients. So it's we can really focus in on the right kind of treatment for that patient.
You know, when we talk about the role of the therapist, one of the things I say around here is, you know, all stories of addiction and recovery are the same, except they're different. Is it hard for someone in your position to not see these stories as the same story over and over again? How do you avoid that pitfall?
I don't know. You know, you do hear a lot of the same stories, you know, but I think we all have a story. And, you know, but it can get, I mean, this field can be very stressful, and you can burn out in this field for just taking in what you take in every day from mm-hmm. these clients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just had one not too long ago. It's probably the worst story I've ever heard. And just the whole counter transfer and the transference issues
sure.
within yourself. And so you got to be really mindful of these types of things. And so, again, that you can provide the best therapy for that patient.
For that individual person.
Yeah.
So you are a pastor in your church?
Yes, I am.
How long have you been a pastor?
Well, I've been a pastor for 5 years, but I evangelized, you know, preaching revivals for 15 years and doing all different kind of private practice and working at different agencies and kind of got into the Christian field of counseling and marriage retreats and different things like that.
Yeah, you know, it raises the interesting questions about the role spirituality plays in this. I know that for a lot of people on the outside who maybe are resisting this notion of getting help, when particularly in the 12-step arena, when they hear about greater power and God, it's a pushback for them. They don't want to hear it. Is your role as a pastor helping in any of that?
Well, I believe it does. I believe that I'm well-versed, so I can meet the need of the patient if they come in as a Protestant or if they come in with Catholicism or something. I mean, I never, you know, I'm more of the role of a therapist there at retreat. I'm not, you know, a pastor, but, you know, I came up in 12-step and I'm, you know, well-versed at a lot of different types of spirituality. So, again, I think it's about meeting their needs, you know, of what they believe yeah. in and how can we, you know, use that.
I would guess a drug and alcohol therapist or a clinical specialist is probably trained to listen a little more than a pastor is. Listening is an incredibly important part of your job, isn't it?
Yes, but I think it's important in both jobs, but they're different. You know, it's a difference in pastoral counseling and you know, and counseling and being a therapist, you know. So it is a totally different role in my church. You know, I don't try to be a therapist in my church. I'm proud to be a pastor and in that role, you know, to do pastoral counseling. Mm-hmm. And I'm fortunate, but as a therapist, I know when to refer out, you know, when mm-hmm. people got, you know, problems. I mean, you know, hey, God made doctors and therapists, you know, so.
Stacy McGee, our guest on Recovery Radio. Stacy's a clinical specialist helping people with the disease of addiction. He is, of course, a staff member of Retreat. Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, our sponsors. We have more with him and you straight ahead. Don't go away.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano with you. We'll get back to our guest in a second, but this is the portion of the program where I remind you why we're here. Well, I'll tell you why we're here. We're here to tell you about the disease of addiction. And the reason we need to tell you about the disease of addiction is that no matter how often you see it broadcast in the media about an opiate epidemic and deaths every day and all of that's going on, the ugly truth of the matter, or the unfortunate truth of the matter, is that of the universe of people who need to be treated for the disease of addiction, a very, very small number actually get the care they need. Very small. And that's got to change. That's got to change immediately. So if this disease has not visited you, you've been blessed. You have absolutely been blessed. So I'm going to give you the retreat's phone number for a couple of reasons, in the hopes you never have to use it. That's the truth from the founder of this company. Give them the number. Tell them we hope they never have to use it. But if they do, Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, they stand ready to provide you with, I'm telling you, world-class treatment. All of their facilities, top-notch. They have a national reputation and a growing one for being among the best in this field. But again, I'm giving you this phone number purely as an informational tool. Put it in the drawer. Again, we hope you never need it. But if you've got any questions about anything you hear in this program or anything at all regarding treatment, insurance, what's going on in your life, you call Retreat. They'll get you. If they don't have the answers, and they will. But if they don't, they'll get you answers. So here's the phone number, 855-859-8808. Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, 855-859-8808. From their clinical specialist department, Stacy McGee has been in the studio with us. Stacy is 27 years in the field of treatment, so he has seen a lot. And in 27 years is an enormous amount of time covering the changes that have occurred in the treatment of this disease. Every year we learn more about addiction. Every year there are new techniques and new attitudes about how to treat this disease. And from Stacy's standpoint, he's seen a lot of those. Let's talk about some of the changes. What's the biggest change you've seen over 27 years in the treatment of the disease of addiction?
I believe the biggest change is the medical model. And, you know, when we were detoxing patients, we didn't have the, you know, the type of, you know, medicine and Suboxone and Subutex and stuff like that to help in the detox process. So I think it's the medical model, and then, of course, it's been a shift in different types of therapies that have come along, which I think has really helped our field.
What are some of the changes in therapeutic methods that you've used?
In my era in California, I mean, there was a lot of Gestalt therapy. It was a lot of transactional analysis, which we call TA. You know, of course, a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy, but we've come all the way around to, you know, more of a psychoeducational. You know, I did do a lot of psychotherapy and was trained under a psychotherapist.
What? Tell me about that. What is that?
Well, I mean, psychotherapists has come from a lot of that psychodynamic, but you know, it's like, you know, I'd like to, you know, we did a lot of Gestalt in TA therapy, and with like the psychodramas, you know, the role plays and setting that up and the group process. And so, you know, it's been an interesting journey for me having to adapt, you know, throughout, you know, my career and, you know, the old Gestalt therapist, I mean, we were just downright mean. And so, you know, I've had to learn through a lot of experience, you know, how to use it in the proper way.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that you've seen clearly is when you talk about the medical model, 27 years ago, there were still lots of people who would suggest that this was a moral failure or a character flaw. That accounts for some of the toughness in the Gestalt therapy. It's like, shape up, this is on
most
you.
Most definitely.
Right? That's changed.
Yeah, that has changed, and I'm glad that has changed, you know. I think it's just all-encompassing, you know. But this is a disease of the brain, and it took me a while to even get that, you know, coming from my background. But it is definitely a disease of the brain, and we have, you know, images and brain scans and to look at that type of model.
Yeah, we now can see what the effect is on certain parts of the brain. And the other thing that we've learned because of the medical model of this disease now is that not only does the drug you're abusing or the alcohol you're abusing hijack you at that moment, it really changes the way you think. See, people don't understand. They look at people abusing drugs and they go, why would anybody keep doing that? Why would they keep doing that knowing?
Most definitely. It's like, I came from that background. It's like I was not even raised, I wasn't raised to be an addict. Of the behavioral component out of this disease. And that's what makes it so interesting and so difficult to treat, because you're not only treating it medically, you're treating it on a behavioral standpoint.
Right. You recognize that this is a disease and has to
most
be
definitely
considered as one, and one that for which there is no cure. So the way to work on that is to change the way you think and behave, and you have a chance of mastering this problem.
Yeah. And, way back then, all we knew was the 12-step stuff. And, you have an allergy, like Dr. Silkworth said, an allergy in the body. If you're allergic to a strawberry, you ate a strawberry, you'd have a reaction. When you drink alcohol, you have a reaction or drug. But now we know specific parts in the brain, how this disease reacts. And so why it goes against all our choices, our morals too. So,
let's just take one moment here about AA. I don't want to get into a big, long discussion about AA, but AA is not, strictly speaking, a treatment for the disease of substance
different.
Abuse, right? What is it then if it's not a treatment? What is AA in your mind?
Well, I think it is geared more spirituality, but there's even a lot of confusion of the spiritual component because, then you get into religion and you get, they say the word God in 12-step, but it's really about your own conceptualization of a higher power, whether that be the fellowship or whether that be the universe or nature or whatever it is. But it's just got to be something greater than yourself.
Outside yourself.
Right. And I think that's where the whole support comes in with even us as human beings, because that was the whole premises of Bill and Bob, was to help each other keep sober. And that's a very important part of life, period.
Stacy McGee, our guest, clinical specialist for Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, talking about his 27-year career in this field. You had your own struggle with drugs and alcohol.
Yes, I did.
Right? Tell us about that.
Well, it was just, I think, like anything else, started using marijuana and alcohol at 12 years old. I was a real skinny kid and didn't have much self-esteem, and we all got a story, and I won't, get into all that, but just peer pressure, the neighborhood, one thing led to another. And by the time I got in high school, I was into a lot of many other drugs. And then high school, when the senior year, I wanted to be a musician. I wanted to be famous. And so I just fell into that culture. And I believe this is a lifestyle and a culture, and there's different trends of culture. And so it was about being a musician, and it was about, the whole rock and roll and all that
stuff. And in that context, your behavior seemed to go hand in hand. It would seem to me it looked normal to you in that regard, right? This is what musicians did, right?
Oh, yeah, it was sex, drugs, rock and roll.
Yeah. Were there instances of substance abuse in your family?
Yes, my brother. I have one other brother. He was he was 5 years older than me, and he struggled with this disease too. But we are both sober today. And when I got sober, I had to tell my own brother I couldn't hang around him anymore because we were like best friends. And he really got angry at that.
Did you get sober while you were still in the South? Were you still in Louisiana?
No, I went to treatment in California. Mm-hmm. I have been through 4 treatment rehab centers myself. And my last treatment, I was in there with famous people and basketball stars and musicians. And, we thought we were all cool back then.
This is when you were in California.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Do you recall the first time you said, I can't do this anymore, what the circumstances of that were?
I knew 10 years, before I even got sober, that I was in trouble. But I just couldn't stop. I wanted to, but I just couldn't stop.
How old were you at that point when you were aware of the problem?
I think I was around like 20. Yeah, it was about 20 years old. I got sober at 29.
So it takes you that period of time where you have the problem. And this is what we talked about, the brain getting hijacked. You know it's a problem, but you can't stop it.
Well, what's interesting is some people it takes a little time for the brain to get hijacked, or really for me, I knew it an instant that I was going to do this for the rest of my life.
When you were a youngster and you just started?
Yes, I loved it.
First time you got high, you loved it?
Because it gave me a sense of authority and power and meaning. And that's an important part of recovery is how do we replace and get a new meaning in life?
You know, I always find it very instructive when people with your story say the simple truth of, I got high or I drank because I liked it. I mean, most people think, oh, it must be a hell on you. I mean, that's the dirty little secret that you like getting high, right?
It filled a void. It had a purpose. And
Knew that instantly that they were.
As far as me, I knew. It's the first time I sipped alcohol.
This wasn't recreational, or this wasn't just you being a musician that you loved this a little too much. Did you worry it was going to be a problem immediately? Did you?
You never think it's going to be a problem.
Not for you, no.
No,
right.
I can handle this. I can control this. But, it did. And I hit it well. I hit it very well.
You were able to. Well, again, your chosen profession would make it, easy.
Well, even the culture in Louisiana, and that time, you could just run around the neighborhood and your parents didn't really, keep track of you. And
Louisiana has a great open drinking policy. I mean,
oh, yes.
Drinking's a sport in Louisiana.
Oh,
right?
Yes. We start very young in Louisiana, and when I was growing up, legal drinking age was 18. You get your license at 15.
So. We're talking to Stacy McGee about his struggles with drug and alcohol. You've been sober for how long now?
For 28 years.
That's
last
fantastic.
January was 28 years.
That is fantastic. He is a clinical supervisor at Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. We have more with him straight ahead. You're listening to Recovery Radio. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Our guest in the studio is Stacy McGee. Stacy's clinical supervisor specialist at Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. He is 27 years in the field and 28 years sober. And he's telling us about that remarkable story. So you said before we took the break there, Stacy, that you knew almost from the jump that you were going to do this hard. You liked it. You progressed through all of the substances available for you to abuse. And then around 29, you say, you decide, this has got to stop. I got to try something.
Yes. Well, I'd actually went to treatment like at 18, 19, it's tough for our young people, and it's tough for me as a young person trying to get sober. And but I didn't make it back till I was 29. And I was in really bad shape.
So you went to treatment at 18, and you remained sober for over 10 years. Is that what you...
Treatment 18, left treatment, AWOL.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Went to treatment again. My parents kept putting me back in treatment, and finally I just, I didn't get back till 9 years later. And, and I come in weighing about 90 pounds, and... I was really in bad shape, because I progressed all the way to narcotics, barbiturates, mm-hmm. Cocaine, heroin.
Really?
Yes.
So bouncing in and out of rehab three or four times before 20, you hit the wall at 29. What do you tell people who are in treatment now about relapse, because you have experience in relapse. You relapsed many times.
Yes, I do.
How do you explain relapse to them to someone in treatment and not scare the hell out of them?
That's a difficult thing to explain to our clients. And you got to teach coping skills and you got to teach relapse prevention. But I think the most important part is. That I find successful with me is just I've lived it, and I can tell my clients, but relapse was just, it was very difficult for me. I just, again, you can't, you don't know why you keep going out. You
right.
just don't know every moral, every upbringing, everything, and you just keep going out. But this is again, you got to come from a disease standpoint. and let them understand the medical model and let them understand why they can't say no.
During that period between 18 and 29, you were in residential treatment? Were you detoxing during that period of time? How many times were you detoxed?
Three times. Well, you know, most of the dual diagnosis that I went into were detoxed, and then you went to the rehab part.
Right.
And so, yeah, I detoxed, rehab. But, you know, the first time I didn't stay but a week. So I convinced my parents I didn't have a problem. And actually, I did stop alcohol and marijuana and pills, but then I switched to cocaine.
Well, as a musician, what was going on with you? Was it affecting your musician?
Well, that was a lifestyle. No, you know, you get into this delusion that you know, this makes me play better. But I think it's back to the culture. You know, this is what we did as musicians. We went to parties. We hanged around famous people, and we, you know, and it was, you know, strip clubs and, right. And you know, all that lifestyle, you know, that's what you did. But it, you know, it gave me a sense of purpose and meaning.
And I would guess that the people that are telling you that you're sounding great, even though you're loaded, are as loaded as you are. So how would they know how good you sound to begin with?
I don't know. You know, I've had a couple really embarrassing moments in the studio, you know.
We just couldn't do it.
Yeah, because, you don't know your timings often. When you get in the studio, your timing's got to really be on. And the engineer said, I'm going to have another guy come play your parts. It devastated me.
So one of the things that finally got you sober, you think, that moment where you
knew? Well, I think that's just one component of it, you know. But what got me sober is because I was dying. I was at the end of my rope.
Is it accurate to say that to alleviate people's fear and maybe clear up some of the misconceptions about relapse? Look, if this is a disease, and we know it is, chronic diseases, things like diabetes, for which there is no cure, or even cancer to a certain extent, can go into remission and then return. I mean, yeah. There's something like that going on with drug addiction, right?
I think so, but I've had cancer. I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and a bulky mass tumor across my chest, and that was over 12 years ago, and I'm in remission. But again, you got to treat it as a medical problem.
You've got to stay on top of it. If that's true.
You don't follow the prescription, you're not going to get well.
It's amazing when you look at this disease in that context. You can see the very strong relationship between the two things. Stacy McGee, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
As a LSU fan.
Oh, most definitely. Go Tigers.
My condolences. How'd they do this year, by the way?
Sorry?
How'd they do this year?
Well, that's for another discussion, I believe. But when you mentioned Alabama to the other gentleman before we started, I almost came out of my chair.
I mentioned Bama, didn't know who I was sitting in front of. Stacy, thanks so much. Continued success in your career and obviously with your sobriety. When's your anniversary?
January the 16th.
And it'll be 29?
Yeah, I got sober in 1989. And January the 16th is my sobriety birthday. And,
that's terrific. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Any questions, comments you guys might have about things you've heard on the program, don't forget, Retreat is there, 855-859-8808. I want you to enjoy the rest of your weekend and look for us again next Saturday on Recovery Radio.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.